Presiding Justice, my name is Mr. Mollison.
We're judges, actually, we're not justices.
Oh, I thought appellate judges were always...
You're not in the Illinois Appellate Court.
Okay, I apologize, sir, but good morning. And good morning to Presiding Judge and fellow judges. Let me say at the outset that I'm aware that crimes involving children rarely gather any public sympathy.
Unless they're virtual children.
Unless they're virtual children. Well, we unfortunately, in this case, we don't have virtual children, so I guess we need not get there. But that type of species of offense gets very little public sympathy, and in spite of that, my argument is that notwithstanding...
What's remarkable about this case, forget about the child, it's such a life sentence that your client got. Even after the adjustment you're complaining about, it's a trivial sentence for someone who's deported and comes back in. There ought to be extremely heavy punishment for those people because they're so hard to catch.
Now, apart from your sympathy problem, we've got another problem, but go ahead.
This is a yo-yo problem. People are deported, they come right back in.
Well, Judge,
he'll be in jail for, what, a couple of years, and then he comes back.
I mean, you know, the problem is...
He got a big break here. I don't understand this sentence.
Well, I think it's simple to understand, Judge. This is, quite frankly, a great country. I think there are a lot of people that would like to get into this country, and he's one of them. And we might argue about how he goes about doing
it. The Act of Liberty has open arms for scofflaws.
You need a heavier punishment to keep them out. You're making my point.
Exactly.
Right? Not only are they hard to catch, but they have such an urgent desire.
Give me the next line. If you were appointed to do this, go ahead from there.
I'm sorry.
I said if you were appointed to do this, so go ahead.
Appointed to?
Weren't you appointed to this case?
No, sir.
No, you're not appointed?
No, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
Fair game.
Go ahead.
No, I'm private counsel. Yes, I Mr. Jimenez probably should have got a more, and he'll probably be back.
It's kind of scary, isn't it? I mean, well, you know, just taking these children for sexual purposes into the trailer or a house or something is... It is frightening.
Well, let me point out that Mr. Jimenez is, in fact, owns a business. He's a married man. He's married to a United States citizen.
Getting worse than
family. He's not entirely a derelict. He has made some contribution to this nation.
It makes it worse, actually, doesn't it?
I'm sorry?
It makes it worse. Because the more sort of established he is, the easier it is for him to lure children.
Well...
The more respectable facade he has, the more dangerous he is to children.
Well, the question is...
How does he have a business?
I'm sorry?
Working without a visa is itself a crime. So you've just identified another crime your client
Well, no,
committed.
Sir, he's self-employed. He owns the business. He owns the company.
And no one hires him to do anything in this business?
I guess he's the owner. He runs it himself.
What is the business?
It's a food restaurant supply business.
Right, so he's got clients.
Customers.
Yep.
But laying that aside, come back to Mr. Justice Posner's observation, you know, the question becomes, is he a danger to anybody? I mean, he does disgusting things, but the precise question is,
it's taking the children into the house that's frightened. And the other stuff that he does is not, I agree, it's not the worst thing in the world, but when they bring him into the house, that's when you begin to be disturbed.
I beg your pardon, Judge. The fact as I and the government understand them is that he had parked his van in a back alley near where children were playing.
And tried to lure him into the van.
Right. And the question became whether or not whatever he was doing, was he attempting to get the children into the van?
Actually, we can't look at what the underlying facts are.
I agree.
The rule is that we look at the elements of the offense.
Exactly.
And if the elements of the offense could be committed with or without violence, at the charging papers.
Exactly.
But all the charging papers allege is just plain child abduction. There are no details beyond the allegation of child abduction.
Yes, sir. I agree.
Now, that takes us to the legal issue. We know from Taylor that ordinary residential burglary is a crime of violence because of the possibility that violence will ensue if the burglar meets the homeowner. Why isn't that equally applicable to child abduction? That a child, once abducted, may either try to free him or herself, or the parents or the police may try to free the child. One would think there is a potential for violence and for other acts in the crime of child abduction.
Well, the argument that I put forward was, if there was one shred of evidence that there was violence even considered, Mr. Himmler...
Not in this case. The run of cases, if you look at burglary, there's no need to prove that the burglar ran into the householders on a particular...
I agree. It's inherently dangerous.
No need to prove that he was armed. It's simply a statistical fact that violence arises from some percentage of burglaries. It turns out, the Supreme Court said in one case, that probability is about 3.8%. 3.8% risk was enough to make residential burglary a crime of violence. What do you think the probability is of problems arising from child abduction?
Well, you know, the problem with statistical analysis is probability is always defined as the number of opportunities versus the number of hits. It's a fraction. And in order to come to that number, you have to have
the
data.
The definition of a probability.
Sir?
That's the definition of a probability, yeah.
Well, you know, people throw this word probability
around. But what do we know about child abduction?
I'm sorry?
What do we know about that probability for child abduction?
To my knowledge, nobody has collected any statistics.
The Department of Justice collects a whole load of statistics about these things. And one can easily look it up on their website. Their website says the probability of violence in child abduction cases is 3% of all child abductions end in violence. Now, that's close to 3.8% for burglaries. Maybe there's a legal difference, but we can't just pretend nobody knows. In fact, we do know, or at least we do know what the FBI's data tell us. Now, is there a legal difference between 3% and 3.8% violence rate?
But that's certainly another way of saying that at 96-point-some percent of the cases, there is no violence. That's a very substantial majority.
That's why I asked the question about the comparison to burglary. In 96% of burglaries, all that happens is that something gets stolen and no one gets shot or attacked or hit. And in 4%, there is something that happens. So I'm asking whether you think that there is, should be, a legal difference between 3%, actually 2.97%, and 3.8%.
Well, Your Honor probably knows the story of Sir Isaac Newton. At the time he developed the calculus, it was also developed contemporaneously in Europe by another gentleman.
Isaac Newton was in Europe.
Well, it was an Englishman, I believe.
That's part of Europe.
Well, okay, I won't argue that. But at the time it was developed, the quotation was made, and I don't have the source, but that now that we have the calculus, we can abolish the law courts. For all we need to do is set up the formula and plug in the regular numbers. This is a new age.
It either Newton or Leibniz
and that just simply has not come to pass. I mean, I understand that, you know, there's much to be said for quantifying things, because when we quantify things, it allows us to get a handle, a real grasp on what's going on. But and I don't have the statistics, for instance, for violence and shoplifting, but I'm sure, just based on my own experience as a practitioner, there have been a number of shoplift cases where it has resulted in violence, shoplifters being rustled to the floor.
It wouldn't surprise me, but we're operating under a legal test borrowed from 18 U.S.C. Section 16, where the probability of a violent outcome is essential. Seems to me we need, in light of Taylor, to draw lines, so I was seeking your view on that process. And it won't work to say, let's not draw lines. One has to grapple with what we've been given by the Supreme Court and Congress as a legal standard.
Yes, sir, but I think when we attempt to take the mathematical tool of statistics to try to gain.
But do you have a better tool?
Well, you know, sometimes things are just not capable of quantification.
That's fine, then you need an alternative. So what's the alternative?
Well, the present standard seems to be to take them on a case-by-case basis.
Well, what does that mean?
It means that the judges get to look at it and make a decision.
Well, all right, if we look at it, most of us probably think the risk is even greater.
But isn't that another way of simply saying that this is a statute that is really inappropriately vague? I mean, Judge Koukouras was saying, you know, down in the district court...
Is that what you're challenging? Is that you're raising an argument?
No, I'm not making a challenge, but, you know, Judge Koukouras...
How do you want us to decide these cases?
Well, the statute says itself, 16B, whether violence could have been, would have been,
right,
possibly could, in the course of committing this offense. And it seems to me that sets an end point for what did in fact happen. It doesn't require any speculation beyond looking at what happened. Now,
I thought you said we couldn't look at what happened. Well, specifics of the case.
Sir, I'm sorry.
You said we shouldn't look at the specifics of the case.
Well, I think the problem is that any judge would be uncomfortable trying to decide a case on a police report or parading witnesses into a courtroom where, you know...
So what's the alternative?
I think the Bazon case was well decided. Look at exactly what the charging document says. Look at what you know about the offense. If it isn't there, it isn't there, and there's no reason to gather wool. There's no reason to speculate.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mollison. Mr. Gillisley?
And since most of your arguments have already been made...
Good morning, Your Honor. Daniel Gillisley on behalf of the United States. Your Honor, I think to get right to it, I think that we have a waiver situation here, that when the district court asks counsel straight up, do you dispute that this is just a defense level 13, criminal history 3, response was, we do not. I think that constitutes a waiver, as we described in our brief, because the only way you get to just a defense level 13 is if the defendant's prior Illinois conviction for child abduction is categorized as a crime of violence under Rule 16, or excuse me, Section 16B, and becomes an aggravated felony under the guidelines. With respect to whether or not the offense constitutes a crime of violence under Section 16B, I think either under the categorical approach, which is discussed in Ziong, and then in the case that we submitted to the court yesterday, there is a substantial risk.
But aren't most child abduction cases by one of the parents as part of a custody dispute?
I can't speak to that fact, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
And in that category of cases, there isn't much danger.
In that category of cases, there are very few criminal prosecutions either. So
I will defer to Your Honor on that.
That's a good thing to do. I had a lot of experience in those areas. Go ahead.
I understand the court does. The Illinois
But if we have to look at the crime without regard to the circumstances, then what if it is dominated by parental abduction?
The Illinois
then it wouldn't be very dangerous, would it?
The Illinois Supreme Court did not confine, and the statute itself does not confine, the luring or the abduction of child to parental abduction cases.
No, I understand that, but I mean, suppose that completely dominates the category. Suppose one in a million antitrust cases end in violence. you blow up a competitor's plant with violence. Well, we don't call antitrust offenses violent because the probability is so little.
I think that the analysis is...
Because after all, the question Judge Easterbrook asked of Mr. Mollison can also be asked of you. Where is the actual evidence about the character of the child abduction offense?
I think the analytical approach is the offense by its nature one that involves a substantial risk that physical force will use?
I don't want to step on this too long, but back 40 years ago or 30 years ago, there was a separate section in the kidnapping case that had to do with the abduction, and that is that abduction by a parent against a court order was a separate section. It was not included in the regular kidnapping. Is that still true?
The Illinois statute here has parental kidnapping as one of the subsections and luring, the offense for which the defendant...
It's a different subsection.
It's a different subsection.
So that you'd be looking at them two different ways.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, that was what my understanding was of that the law was still fairly much what it was 30 years ago.
So you're really defining the offense not as child abduction but as luring. The luring subcategory, is that...
The offense, yes, the offense for which this defendant was convicted
is luring.
It's within the general section heading of child abduction, luring being a subsection of that. The Illinois Supreme Court...
Normally the non-luring offense is called kidnapping.
Right. Reach out and snatch him and drag him into the back of the car. Don't ask him anything.
But
no candy.
The second section for parental...
Yes, Your Honor.
Earlier, luring in the second. Luring is not something done by a parent, you're saying, by a stranger.
I can't say that it couldn't apply in a parental situation.
But
it
normal.
Seems not to because there are specific parental takings of a child in violation of a court order, et cetera, in the other subsections. But the substantial risk that violence would occur or that force would be used in the commission of the offense certainly applies when
you're learning. How do you know that there is a substantial risk?
Because of the nature of the offense.
No, offenses don't have natures, they have consequences. And if one asked you, does burglary create a substantial risk, what would you do in response? You could easily imagine the figures coming out, 4% or 10% or 1%. And if it came out 1%, maybe we wouldn't say it was a substantial risk. So how do we know that child abduction poses a substantial risk?
I don't have the statistics.
First, one might start with the data, and then one might worry about what the word substantial means.
I have not seen a case in the circuit that has employed that statistical analysis, although I'm not suggesting that's an inappropriate analytical tool. The point is that the offense by its nature...
Your own statistics.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Your own statistics.
Well, the court's ahead of me on that, I confess. When you have an offense which prohibits the luring of a child into a vehicle for an other than a lawful purpose, as we stated in the brief, it creates the risk that the defendant, the perpetrator of this, is trying to get the child in there for a particular reason that's contrary to the law.
It creates the risk, and the question is, how often does the risk come to pass?
2.8%, he gave it to you earlier.
2.97%,
Your Honor.
According to FBI figures.
According to FBI
Which, of course,
figures.
You will never question, although social scientists sometimes wonder whether FBI figures are all that accurate.
I'm not in a position to speak to the Bureau of Statistics, Your Honor.
No, you're talking about the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Their statistics are separate. I'd quit while I was ahead if I were you, but I mean, you can do whatever you want.
I am through, Your Honor. I would simply ask the court that the sentencing order be affirmed.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you to Mr. Molliston, and the court will be in recess until sometime in the future.